A title, sweet nothing in my ear. Set against a dark backdrop, a hand moves gracefully. Jeff Daniels, Marley Matlin. Now a manicured woman's hand glides into view, bearing a wedding ring. Sonia Walger. A masculine hand takes the woman's hand. Ed Waterstreet. The woman's index fingers hook together, one on top of the other. Now the masculine hand rises into view, wearing a wedding ring. The woman's hand rises before it. Phyllis Frelick. A child's hand reaches upward and the woman takes it. David Oyelowo, John Rubenstein. Now the man takes the child's hand in his. Carlise Burke, Shoshana Stern. The woman makes an X with two fingers of each hand. The child's open palm appears, bearing a hand-drawn smiley face, introducing Noah Valencia as Adam. Now a woman with golden brown hair turns. With dark gray eyes, she watches a woman arrange files. Music by Charles Bernstein. The gray-eyed woman looks over at a bald man using a phone. Edited by Michael Brown, ACE. Production designer, Barbara Dunphy. Her eyes dart toward a smartly dressed woman speaking with a bailiff and a tall man opening a briefcase on a nearby table. She observes the file clerk setting out paperwork and a stenographer sitting at her machine. Director of photography, Donald M. Morgan, ASC. The smartly dressed woman approaches and speaks with exaggerated lip movements. Line producer, Larry Albuquer. A septuagenarian couple enters the courtroom sitting behind the gray-eyed woman. The older woman blows her a kiss. The man squeezes his hand into a fist. Producer Joseph Sargent, produced by Ann Hopkins. This program has been described by the Media Access Group at WGBH with funding from CBS. Described by Rebecca Peterson, Fabian Marquez, and Kate O'Toole. Read by Pat Lentz. A judge enters. At the nearby table, a man with a stubborn chin leans around the tall lawyer, gazing at the gray-eyed woman. The judge raises a gavel.
They say a baby can hear inside the womb. So all through Laura's pregnancy, I put my mouth close to her belly and spoke to Adam inside her.
Were you in the delivery room when your son was born?
I was. He was crying and crying when they handed him to me. And when I spoke to him, he stopped, opened his eyes, looked up at me. It was the sound of my voice. He recognized it. It's like we knew each other already.
And when did events begin to change for you and your family?
The father's gaze drifts to the gray-eyed woman. An interpreter translates via sign language.
Adam was 8, just before his birthday. The day started at Adam's school. We were a little late.
Executive producer Marion Reese. In a flashback, the father signs to the boy.
Gonna be late. You wanna fly?
Adam nods his fist.
Ready for takeoff? All right, here we go.
He hefts Adam up to sit on his shoulder.
You got big. All right, here we go.
They dash past a sign, Pinewood School for the Deaf. Executive producer Brent Shields. Teleplay by Stephen Sachs. Based on the play by Stephen Sachs. Directed by Joseph Sargent. Now on a small stage, the gray-eyed woman signs while a stout woman translates.
But I must thank the parents for their part in the play, voicing for their children while they're performing this play.
Attending parents flutter their hands in the air.
And I want to thank all of the moms for making the costumes.
Costume children wave and bow.
Don't our kids look great? And a very special thank you to my dear husband for building the set for us.
Adam's father waves, then takes off a straw hat, holding it high. A child taps Laura's shoulder and signs.
Excuse me, is it true that when the play is over, we get to go home early? No, it is, but it's not time for all that now. Go, you're about to go on. Okay, places everywhere.
You are listening to video description on the SAP channel. This service is primarily intended for viewers who are blind or visually impaired. To return to regular program audio, turn off the SAP feature on your TV or VCR. A girl costumed in gingham signs.
Auntie Emma, the Twister, is heading right towards us.
Dorothy, get in the storm cellar now before it's too late.
Auntie Em, where are you?
Dorothy lies down. A girl dressed in white touches Dorothy with a magic wand. As she groggily sits up, Laura and her husband smile. Dorothy signs.
Where am I?
Your house fell on the Wicked Witch and killed her. Now you're wearing her magic shoes.
Later, Dorothy stands with three companions.
I am going to the Great Oz to ask him if he can send me back home to Kansas.
And ask him if he can give me a heart.
And ask him to give me some brains.
A boy dressed like a lion faces the audience and claws at the air.
Do you think the Great Oz could give me some
courage?
He fearfully hides his face.
Why don't you come with us and find out? You'd be so very welcome. Are you ready?
Let's go!
The children join hands and skip down an aisle, cutting through the audience. Adam's father flutters his hands in the air. Laura claps, then does the same. Now Adam runs around a backyard with a balloon while his father uses a phone.
He's turning 8. Yeah, we're going to have the party right here in our backyard. So I'm going to need you in your full pirate regalia, you know, games, magic balloon animals, you name it. How much is that going to cost me? You're kidding. How about for a couple of parrot hand puppet things, something?
Adam loses hold of the balloon.
And also, by the way, this is not your typical birthday party. Adam.
The boy chases the drifting balloon.
Hold on a minute. Adam!
Adam trips over a bicycle lying on the grass and falls hard. The father stares as the boy clutches his shin. Later, a silver SUV speeds into a hospital parking lot. Riding shotgun, Adam holds a bloody rag to his leg. Now, a doctor gently sutures the gash in his shin.
Hey. Hey.
His father signs.
You're gonna be okay. The doctor is going to make it all better.
Adam manages a brave nod and wipes his tears away.
So how did this happen?
Oh, he was chasing a balloon. I yelled out like an idiot, but...
Was Adam born deaf?
No, he was born hearing.
And when did it start to go?
A couple of years ago.
And he doesn't use a hearing aid?
No, they stopped helping.
Ah. That must have required quite an adjustment.
I've accepted it.
I meant him.
Adam's father eyeballs the doctor.
His mother is deaf. She teaches deaf children. Mommy taught you to sign, right?
Adam signs.
Yeah, Mommy gave me magic hands, yes.
What about his speech?
He doesn't speak anymore. I mean, he used to say stuff to me, but then when he went totally deaf, he just...
The father gestures at his throat.
What's that?
It means he turned off his voice.
The doctor nods slowly, then smiles at Adam.
Okay, that should do it.
Hold on.
Yeah, we may turn it back on if he could hear himself speak.
We can't reverse what nature's done.
Well, sometimes we can. Have you ever heard of a cochlear implant?
What?
You do realize your son could hear sound again.
Excuse me? Not like a hearing child, but thanks.
Some sound and hearing is better than none, right?
They head out.
I mean, if his heart were defective, you wouldn't question implanting an artificial valve.
Well, the deaf don't see themselves as defective. That's the point. I've been married to a deaf woman for 9 years. Nothing about her is defective. Trust me.
Adam signs and shows a handheld video game.
Oh, you won! Good job.
All right, here's the Hudson Ear Institute. Dr. Flint, he could help you.
Thanks, anyway.
It's just information. Information can't hurt you.
We don't want someone sticking wires in his head. It's not an option. No way.
Now, Adam's father texts as they go to the car.
Adam. Okay. Don't worry. See you at home.
Adam signs.
Yep, Mommy.
His father pretends to punch his cheek. Later, the hearing man drives. He eyes his son, who gazes out the windshield, then tickles him. Adam grins and tickles him back.
Oh, I'm driving!
The father playfully socks his arm.
Get out!
They drive past a park where a group of children play an informal game of soccer. Stopping at an intersection, Adam's father pensively watches them. His son looks out the opposite window, then faces the traffic light. As it turns green, Adam taps his father's shoulder, points at the light, and mouths, "Go."
Sorry.
The father nods his thanks and drives off with a quick glance at the children. Later, Laura steers a sleek four-door into the driveway of a colonial-style clapboard house. She climbs out and jogs across a closely cropped lawn to the two-story home's front door. As Laura hurries inside, her husband descends the staircase. She puts down her purse and signs, her unspeaking lips set in a worried grimace.
I got here as fast as I could.
He's taking a nap.
She signs again.
What did the doctor say?
No, he said he's fine.
Laura clambers upstairs.
Normal kid.
The worried mother eases open the door to a boy's room. She moves past an easel and a dresser topped with shelves of toys to a bed where Adam lies asleep. Bending toward her son, she strokes the bandage below his knee, then unfolds a fringed afghan and gently covers him. Now a sign outside an office building reads, Harrison and Dean, Public Relations. Inside, a man plays with a paddle-shaped device that video captures his face, simultaneously showing it on a screen.
Here you are, Mr. Donner.
Yeah, that's quite a development.
A woman brings coffee.
Thank you very much.
As he takes a sip, the woman bustles out of the office, crossing to a desk in a reception area. From a nearby corridor, Laura's husband strides in carrying a briefcase. He peeks at the man in the office, then enters.
Mr. Donner, thank you for pushing the meeting. I'm sorry, something at home.
Nothing too serious, I hope.
No, nothing serious at all.
Well, while we were waiting, your lovely assistant was explaining this video phone to me.
Oh, yeah, man, that's pretty cool, isn't it? My wife and I can see each other and sign. And over the phone, she's deaf, and my son is deaf, too. So, have a seat.
Both men sit.
So, what did you think of our proposal?
Impressive. But I should warn you, our company's set in its ways.
Well, I don't want to change anything, but, you know, to me, public relations is about perception. My job is to recognize what it is about you that makes you unique. You know, special.
Now on a computer screen, the words cochlear implant type out in a search window. A list of results pops up. Laura's husband clicks the mouse and an explanatory web page appears. He scrolls through it, rapidly hitting the down arrow on his keyboard and reading intently. The title of a new page reads, How a Cochlear Implant Works. The concerned father leans closer. Now at Adam's backyard birthday party, boys in pirate gear play soccer with him. Parents chat on the periphery. The stout woman approaches a small group where the older man from court converses with Laura's husband.
What's this time?
Okay. Excuse me, can I borrow Mr. Williams?
Oh, sure. Absolutely.
She signs while speaking.
Meet my husband, Ray. This is Laura's father, Max.
I read your book on deaf culture. It's very good. I learned a lot.
She translates as Max signs.
I'm glad you enjoyed it.
Laura joins them.
Laura, you must be very proud of your father.
Ray's wife signs for Laura, who steps closer to her father and signs back.
He means the world to me.
Max responds.
Proud of you, too.
He kisses Laura's cheek.
Is your mom here?
Ray's wife signs. Laura scans the crowd, then jerks her head at her mother, who signs to the group of young soccer players. Laura's husband chats with another couple.
Let me get the Alice. My parents are here. Let me get them over. Mom, Dad, oh, you made it. Oh, good to see you.
They embrace.
Oh, how was your flight?
The movie was good.
Pretzels were bad.
Adam runs over.
Hey, here's a birthday boy.
Darling.
How are you doing, Adam?
Happy birthday.
Big boy. You look great.
Where should I put that?
Adam adds her gift to a pile of presents.
Oh, my goodness. Mount Vesuvius erupts.
Yeah. Yes. Hey, come on over. You remember the Scots live across the street?
Yes, of course. How are
my
you?
My parents?
Hi. Nice to see you.
I'll get you guys some drinks.
Later, Adam's father brings out a cake.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you.
Everyone signs while singing.
Happy birthday, dear Adam.
Adam grins at his beaming parents. His paternal grandparents flutter their hands in the air with the rest of the guests as his maternal grandparents clap. Adam starts to blow out his birthday candles. Laura grabs his arm.
Oh, wait.
They sign.
You have to make a wish. Tell me. Well, for what? What do I wish for?
Later inside, Adam's father gazes off pensively as he shoves crumpled sheets of gift wrap into a garbage bag. Washing dishes, Laura waves to get his attention. He maintains his distant stare and gathers more wrapping paper. She knocks on a breakfast bar. She signs, her mouth closed.
Great party. Don't you think? Adam had such a good time. The cutter just needed to bother him a bit.
chasing that balloon. That's all he was doing.
Oh, he's all right.
Yeah, well.
Her husband signs while speaking.
What if next time he's chasing the balloon and it leads him out into traffic?
Deaf kids don't walk into traffic. You never see on the news. Deaf child wanders aimlessly into traffic. It doesn't happen.
Her husband paces closer, facing her over the breakfast bar.
What if we were given the chance to change the direction of his life? The ER doctor suggested that we can actually choose.
Choose what?
Whether Adam should have a cochlear implant.
Washing a platter, Laura freezes. Her husband offers a nervous smile, then bites his lip as her gray eyes narrow.
The doctor said that Adam is a good candidate. The younger he is, the more effective the implant will be. He may still remember what things sound like.
He nervously raps his knuckles on the counter.
I can't believe you'd even...
No, I told the doctor no.
Good.
Laura's husband turns away, then gathers up the garbage bag. Stepping around the breakfast bar, he joins her in the kitchen. He sets the bag aside, leans against a counter, and signs.
Then I checked the internet. Implants now have a 16-channel sound. I mean, they're powered by a computer microchip.
Wait, are you actually considering this?
There's this doctor, Dr. Flint. Let's at least go see him. I mean, how can we make an intelligent decision if we don't have all the facts?
But we know all this already. You and I talked. We always agreed. Why are you suddenly...
Because what if? What if our boy could hear again?
Adam's happy the way he is.
I know, but...
And you and I have always told Adam to love who he is. Now you want to tell him something's wrong with him? Why?
To maybe give him back one of the basic human senses that nature wants all of us to have.
But this is what nature wants. Nature did it. Being deaf is as natural to Adam and me as being hearing is to you.
Laura earnestly shakes her head. Her husband starts to speak, then stops and leans closer to her.
Let's go meet this doctor, okay? Next week.
Laura's shoulders slump.
Friday.
Friday?
Yeah. 3:45.
You made an appointment without even asking?
Doctors are so busy. I mean, you have to grab them when you...
Gaping incredulously, she turns away and folds her arms. Her husband gently squeezes one of them.
What?
You're scaring me.
Don't be scared.
You've already made up your mind.
No, I'm keeping my mind open.
Laura's husband looks into her eyes.
Can you...
She studies his face with a knitted brow.
So, Ms. Kramer, why don't you tell the court a little about Pinewood?
Well, Pinewood has been there for 70 years. We are the only deaf elementary school in the county.
Please tell the court, Ms. Kramer, do any of the children at your school have a cochlear implant?
No. The policy at our school is that all our kids sign.
And when you see a child with an implant, how do you personally feel?
My heart breaks.
And why is that?
Well, 100 years ago, we would take deaf people and slice out the bottom of their tongues to loosen their tongues. We thought that it would make them speak like us. Today, they drill holes in their skulls.
Objection. Unwarranted comparison, Your Honor, and irrelevant to these proceedings.
I agree. Sustained.
Could you maybe clarify your point for the court, Ms. Kramer?
What I'm trying to say is, I am around deaf kids and their families every day at our school. We don't look at deafness as a handicap that needs to be corrected. Why do we feel this need to make them speak like us?
She signs.
They speak with their hands.
Later, with a new witness.
You're a deaf mother, Mrs. Parks.
Yes, I have a daughter. She's deaf.
Wait a minute. You're deaf. I notice you're not utilizing the services of the sign language interpreter.
I don't need one. I can hear everything you're saying.
But how is that possible?
I have a cochlear implant.
Mrs. Parks parts her long blonde hair, revealing a 2-inch metallic button a few inches above her ear. Laura lifts her brow.
Wow. And is your daughter deaf?
Yes, we got an implant 2 years ago.
As a deaf parent, was that a hard decision for you to make?
We are still a deaf family. We have a lot of deaf friends. We did get some pressure not to do it. But then I got mine, and there was no question in my mind.
And you feel that giving your child an implant has improved the quality of her life?
She hears music, calls. She can talk to anybody, anytime. She won't ever be left out of anything anymore. It's a miracle.
Laura's husband allows a faint, hopeful smile. Laura tensely works her mouth, then turns and signs reassuringly to her parents.
Let me remind both parties, the purpose of these proceedings is not for the court to decide whether the minor should receive an implant. This is a custody hearing.
The husband tightens his lips and shifts his gaze. In a flashback, he digs through old toys on a shelf in Adam's closet, pulling down a child's bulky tape recorder and a paper bag. The father flips off the closet light and shuts the door, then takes a seat on Adam's bed and pulls two cassettes out of the bag. He eyes the labels, cocking his head, and inserts one into the machine. The father closes the lid and presses play.
Well, Adam, tell Daddy how old you are today.
Three.
Three, that's right. Good boy. You're a big boy now.
Yeah.
Can you sing the alphabet song?
Yeah. A, B, C, D.
Adam's father yields a sorrowful smile. Adam bursts into the room and pulls a ball out of a bin. His father hides the recorder under a pillow.
Hey!
He tosses Adam a stuffed toy.
Hey! Let's clean up the room, you know, before Grandma sees it. Okay?
All right. Here.
He throws more toys to Adam, who puts them in the bin. The father hooks a soccer ball over his head as he tosses it to his son. Laura enters.
You ready?
Yeah, ready.
Laura takes Adam's hand and signs to him.
Now mind Grandma Sally and go to bed when she tells you to. Daddy and I'll be home after the movie, okay?
She leads him out. Her husband lowers his gaze, then pulls the recorder out of hiding, glancing shamefully at the door. He stares at the toy, then shuts it off. He lovingly caresses the recorder, now in a movie theater.
I'm glad you came in. It gives me a chance to say how sorry I am. I had to lie to you.
Laura adjusts a small captioning screen attached to her seat by a long, flexible rod. Dan offers her popcorn, and she accepts with a smile.
So you see, Adam, I could never satisfy your need. And I know that you could never satisfy mine.
I will never try to again.
Later, Laura and her husband enter a restaurant with the Scots.
Hello. Four of you?
The deaf woman gestures to the hostess.
Laura
leads her group to a table, not seeing their conversation.
They worked out the captions so that she can enjoy the movie more.
Oh, yeah, it's great now, yeah.
Oh, was it always that way?
No, it wasn't.
As they reach the table, he signs.
Laura, remember when we were first dating? And we would go to the movies. This is before captions, right? So we would go to the movies and to impress her, to show her how cool I was, right? I would scrunch down in my seat.
The hostess brings menus.
Here you go.
Yeah, thank you. And scrunch down in my seat real low like this. And I would be frantically trying to secretly sign a whole movie, you know, without being seen. It was just, right?
Laura signs.
You know? Remember that the one time that the usher came over because he thought you were having a seizure? Yes, true.
True, Dan.
Yeah.
You're real Don Juan.
Oh, yeah.
How could you even hold up a fork at dinner after signing an entire movie?
Dan translates for Laura, who signs.
You should have seen him when we saw War and Peace.
You didn't know how to sign before you met Laura, did you?
No. But as soon as I laid eyes on her, I knew I wanted to speak her language.
Laura beams at Dan and they share a loving kiss. Mrs. Scott smiles, then gives her husband a teasing pout.
What?
I speak your language. I just don't understand what you're saying.
She socks him.
Thanks a lot.
Ow.
Later. Dan and Laura pull into their driveway. That excites me. Dan stops the SUV and gazes off as Laura unbuckles her seatbelt. That thrills and delights me. She starts to get out. Dan grabs her arm.
Come here, come here.
Laura questioningly lifts her brow, then settles back in and shuts the door. Dan encloses her hand in his and places it on the dashboard. He gently holds it there, caressing her fingers. Laura faces her husband with an affectionate smile.
It isn't your sweet conversation.
Laura signs with her free hand and Dan nods.
That brings.
It's our song.
His wife's expression grows wistful. Dan beams at Laura and she leans toward him. Her lips meet her husband's and they kiss tenderly.
It's just the nearness of you.
Laura plants gentle pecks on his lips as the kiss ends.
When you're in my...
Dan nuzzles her cheek and she smiles blissfully.
And I feel you.
Morning. In his living room, Dan plays an acoustic guitar. Adam sits next to him, munching a bowl of cereal with his eyes glued to the TV. It shows closed captions next to a talking cartoon deer. In a bedroom, a bedside alarm clock reads 6:45 as a light rhythmically flashes on and off. In bed, Laura squeezes her eyes shut and fumbles for the clock. Finding it, she hits a button and the light switches off. The deaf mother rolls slowly onto her back and lies still, then reluctantly pushes herself upright. Wearing pink pajamas, she notices Dan's side of the bed empty. Later, fully dressed, she heads downstairs, putting in an earring. Her purse hangs from one shoulder. Failing to notice Dan and Adam in the living room, she steps into the kitchen. Scanning the unoccupied room, she finds cereal boxes standing open on an island counter. With a confused frown, Laura heads back through the hall. Fiddling with her earring, she arrives at the living room doorway where she sees Dan placing Adam's hand on the guitar face. As she watches, her husband hooks his arm under the boy's and strums the instrument. Laura takes a few steps closer, his gaze fixed on his son. Dan's fingers nimbly pluck the guitar strings. Keeping his palm pressed to the instrument's face, Adam gives a slow, understanding nod. Dan smiles gently. He juts his chin back and forth, mugging clownishly. Laura's expression falters as she looks on. Dan bites his lip, rocking out for Adam, whose amused gaze shifts between the guitar and his dad. Now at a baseball diamond, Dan parks an SUV with Adam riding shotgun and Laura's father in back. As they get out, the older man signs to the boy, his lips unmoving.
Hey, you know what? There was an outfielder for the Cincinnati Reds.
They grab gear from the trunk.
Threw out three runners at home plate, all the way from the outfield, in the same game.
He leads Adam to the baseball diamond.
And he stole so many bases... He is still on the top 20 list of all time. Know what else was special about him? He was deaf.
Dan closes the trunk and follows.
Only trouble was, he couldn't hear the umpire call out balls or strikes.
Wearing a batting helmet, Adam steps up to home plate.
Watch.
The grandfather puts his jacket on backwards so it resembles an umpire's chest pad.
Know what they did? Hand signals. Sign language.
The white-haired man squats and gestures broadly, scowling like a grouchy umpire. Adam grins and doubles over as Dan watches yards away.
And they still do it, to this day.
Adam's father shifts his gaze. Now Laura and her mother cross a parking lot.
What did he say?
Nothing. He just stared at me like I was a raving lunatic. You should have seen me trying to order this latte. I said, yes, whipped cream. Whipped cream.
She mimes cracking a whip, then milking a cow. They reach a sidewalk and pause by a jewelry store window.
Mom,
Have you ever had to stand up against Daddy? Tell him he's wrong?
Laura's mother signs, her lips unmoving.
There were a few times in our marriage when I wish I had.
When?
The older woman shifts her gaze.
Oh, those are nice.
She approaches the jewelry store window.
That watch would look good on your father, don't you think?
Laura smiles weakly and nods. On the baseball field, Dan pitches to Adam, who swings and misses. His grandfather catches the ball.
Easy! Slow it down!
He throws it back, and Dan signs to Adam.
Am I throwing too hard?
Adam nods his head and his fist.
Sorry.
Dan circles a fist over his heart.
You know what Grandpa said about hand signals is true. And when a player strikes out, the umpire also yells real loud, "You're out!"
Adam mouths the words as he awkwardly mimics the gesture.
Good, but just try it. Use your voice. Just big and loud. Just, "You're out!"
As Laura's dad watches soberly, Adam tries again. Dan approaches.
It's okay.
He crouches before Adam.
Just use your voice. "You're out!"
The boy's lips form the words as he sweeps his thumb toward his shoulder. His grandfather smiles. With a patient smirk, Dan heads back to the infield. Laura's dad hits his glove. The younger man turns back, and his father-in-law joins him.
There was a deaf pitcher for the New York Giants. Pitched 8 years, including the World Series.
Adam hits a ball, sending it over the outfield fence. Dan and his father-in-law share an astonished look, then beam at the boy. Now a videophone shows Miss Kramer signing.
And reminder, staff meeting tomorrow is moved to 11 o'clock.
Unpacking groceries, Laura nods.
Are you okay?
I'm fine.
Anything you want to talk about?
Well...
Adam enters with Dan. Setting his glove aside, the boy grabs a cookie off the counter and takes a bite.
Hold on a sec, okay? Hey, stop that.
Laura takes it from him.
We're having dinner soon. Go wash up.
Dinner. My pot roast is ready.
Miss Kramer waves.
Bye.
She ends the call. Dan joins Laura, setting a duffel bag on the counter.
This competition thing with your father, it's gone too far.
Dan turns away, facing a cabinet. Laura stomps, and he faces her.
Competition thing?
Your father, look. I respect what he's done with his life, but from the beginning, he has never accepted me.
He fills a glass with water.
No, he's accepted you.
No. He tolerates me, barely. His daughter marrying a hearing man.
Dan hits the counter, then raises a finger.
Deaf pride, that's one thing. Deaf prejudice, that's another.
Not true. You're wrong.
Well, don't underestimate prejudice.
Grabbing the duffel, Dan leaves the room. Laura gazes after him with a knitted brow.
Sweet Nothing in My Ear will resume on the Hallmark Hall of Fame after these Hallmark messages.
So ASL is just a kind of English, right?
In the courtroom.
American Sign Language is not English.
No? Isn't sign language just making English with your hands?
No, it is its own official language unto itself. The average hearing person has no idea how complex sign language can be.
Dr. Cannon, as a professor with a PhD in linguistics, would you agree that language creates culture?
It's the standard we use to define any culture around the world.
So, since ASL is an official language, does that mean that deafness is a culture?
Their language is their culture. Their sense of self as a people. Their history, traditions, dignity, power. All of it. It's all carried forward and lives in their hands.
Later.
Dr. Harvey, what does the future hold for Adam as a deaf child?
Well, according to the data available, the average deaf person in this country leaves high school reading at the level of a fourth grader.
Objection. Is counsel suggesting that deaf people can't read? That's absurd.
The average hearing American graduates high school reading at the level of a fifth grader.
Your Honor, the data reflects the national average. Miss Tate will have her opportunity to challenge these findings on cross-examination.
Take a seat, Miss Tate. Wait your turn.
What if Adam wants to go to college? Get a degree.
He would need a sign language interpreter with him all the time in the classroom.
And if Adam somehow manages to get a deaf education, what kind of livelihood can he expect?
The average deaf adult earns far below the national standard. A large percentage of deaf adults receive government subsidies, disability insurance.
Wait a minute. How is it that a deaf person can accept a disability insurance check with one hand and yet claim they are not disabled but a culture with the other?
Objection. Misleading and grossly prejudicial.
Sustained.
I withdraw. Dr. Harvey, as a professor of sociology, would you agree that when Adam Miller's hearing disappeared at age 4, so did many of his life's options and opportunities?
In my opinion, that would be a true statement, yes.
Thank you.
Dan shifts his gaze to Laura, who faces him with a wounded glare. In a flashback, Dan enters their house with a file box as Laura comes downstairs.
Hey, what's going on?
I thought maybe I could work from home, you know, in the afternoons for a while. I told the office that I'd be working, half days.
Why?
Dan crosses to a home office.
You know, to have time with you and with Adam.
Adam developed deafness, not cancer.
She storms off, leaving Dan alone at his office door. Now at the school playground, Laura and Miss Kramer have lunch at a picnic table.
He's making appointments, making decisions, without even asking me. That's so not like us.
Ray will do the same thing sometimes. Men, they don't think it matters.
Dan and I always talk about everything, together, especially about Adam. That's why I feel so, I don't know. Do you and Ray talk about everything?
Sometimes I think that Ray will talk to his best friend about things that he doesn't say to me.
Dan and I have always said, I married my best friend.
So, if that's the case, what are you gonna do?
I don't know.
Adam runs over and opens a lunchbox.
Hi.
He takes out a sandwich. Laura gives a little wave and the boy faces her as he eats.
Do you remember sound?
Some things.
She nods, handing him a small milk carton.
What do you remember? Do you miss hearing things? When you think of sound, do you wish you could hear things again?
Adam sets his half-eaten lunch down.
I'm full. Done.
As he runs off to the playground, Miss Kramer knits her brow at Laura and chuckles.
I wonder if maybe it would have been easier if he'd never heard sound before. If he'd been born deaf like me.
Easier? For whom?
Laura shrugs and her expression grows thoughtful.
I remember the first time I understood there was sound in the world. I was a little girl. My grandmother was hearing. She was outside sweeping the porch.
Laura remembers a gray-haired woman sweeping in front of a Victorian house. Inside, a girl plays with a doll on a staircase. Setting her broom aside, the grandmother enters the house and goes to the kitchen. The young Laura notices and descends the stairs. She peeks in at her grandmother, who lifts a kettle from the stove and pours its contents into a mug. As the older woman steps away, the girl lingers in the doorway, her gaze fixed on a thick plume of steam billowing from the kettle spout. In the present.
And I remember that's when I realized that's sound.
Looking over her shoulder, Laura watches Adam as he kicks a soccer ball with a group of kids. She turns back to face her colleague.
I'm supposed to know what's right for him.
You do know.
Do I?
Miss Kramer gives an encouraging nod and Laura shrugs. Now at an ear institute, Dan and Laura meet with the doctor.
Your parents are hearing impaired?
Laura shakes her head and signs.
Oh, they're deaf. Well, you see, usually I...
Laura raises her hand and points to Dan.
Okay, my signing is what it used to be.
Oh, I'll interpret. Thank you.
You see, most of the parents I see about implants are hearing. 90% of deaf kids have hearing parents.
The doctor steps behind his desk. Laura signs.
Well, when I was born deaf, my parents celebrated, especially my father. See, he's big on deaf pride and deaf culture. He even wrote a book about it.
Laura faces her husband.
If he knew I was here, I know.
More and more deaf parents are getting implants for their children, if that helps you.
He hands them brochures. Laura watches Dan interpret and winces.
That makes me sad. Well, we're just here to get information, that's all.
Laura holds a hand up to Dan, who shrugs and looks away. She faces the doctor.
Tell me about the surgery.
Surgeon drills a hole through the skull into the chamber of the inner ear. And he inserts the electrodes through the hole into the cochlea. Takes 3 to 5 weeks for the incision to heal. And then there's an external transmitter that attaches by magnet.
Then he can hear?
Not yet.
Yeah, well, how long before he gets his hearing back?
You do understand that implants don't cure deafness. When he removes the device, he's still a deaf child.
Laura's brow creases as she signs.
So, what? Is he a deaf child who hears, or is he a hearing child who's deaf? No, he's our son. No, he's too young. He just turned 8. I know.
Actually, it's easier for a child whose brain is still developing to learn to process different sounds. We find that the younger the child is, the better the results we see. We've implanted kids as young as 12 months.
Laura stares at the doctor, then shakes her head and signs.
Well, I'm trying to keep an open mind. I really am.
But that's why it's very important for both of you to understand what implants can and cannot do.
He stands.
Come with me. I want you to see something.
Now with a young boy.
David, I'm going to put this on your ear.
A small device.
And then I'll start this.
She points to a laptop.
And if you hear anything, you tell me. Okay?
The woman fits the device around the boy's ear, then fastens a connected button to his head in an adjacent observation room.
I scheduled your appointment so you could see this.
The technician shows a toy monkey wearing the same device.
See? It's the same.
She faces a couple sitting near David.
I'm going to activate the implant.
She types at the laptop in the observation room.
Now, the hearing aid only amplifies the sound, makes it louder. With an implant, 16 electrodes are surgically inserted into the inner ear.
Okay?
Now, that's the processor attached to his ear there. That sends the sound impulses to the implant, which turns them into electronic signals. And then they are sent directly to the brain. The whole thing runs on a rechargeable battery.
Are you ready?
David's father nods.
Okay, go ahead.
David?
The boy does not respond.
David? Is he hearing me?
It's okay. Keep trying.
David.
The boy keeps his gaze fixed on the toy monkey as he plays with it. Laura shakes her head and Dan watches anxiously.
David.
The technician hits a few keys on the laptop and a horizontal graph line rises in a data window.
Try again.
David.
The boy stops playing and slowly looks around. Dan cocks his head.
David?
Her brow furrowed, David's mother leans forward.
David?
The boy gazes about with parted lips. As Dan looks on, his eyes glisten tearfully.
Oh, darling.
David's father taps the boy's arm.
Can you hear me? Can he hear me?
Well, he can't tell it's your voice, but he is responding to the sound.
Laura swallows hard and eyes her husband. Staring through the window, Dan blinks back tears and smiles faintly.
Now, it'll take some time to retrain Adam's brain to receive sound again. And then he'll need speech therapy.
Well, maybe at Adam's school we can...
Well, Adam would have to change schools.
Dan grimly translates to Laura. She winces and responds.
Why?
Well, with an implant, he'll be going to a mainstream school to learn how to listen and speak.
As they enter an elevator, Laura signs to Dan.
What about his signing?
Well, that would become his second language.
Laura watches Dan interpret, then stares at the doctor.
And with time, Adam will be able to sign at home and speak and hear in the outside world. switch back and forth.
Scowling, Laura shifts her gaze between the men, then signs.
But he won't feel part of the hearing world because he'll never hear what the other kids hear. And he won't feel part of the deaf world because he'll never be totally deaf.
Well, I think you'll find that Adam will have the best of both worlds.
Leaving the elevator, Laura faces Dan.
What do you say? What do you say when Adam says, Daddy, why? Why are you doing this to me?
What?
Is there something?
Could you?
The doctor steps away.
Wrong with being deaf? I don't get it. Tell me, what are you going to tell him?
What do I say when he looks up at me and he says, you had the chance to get my hearing back and you did nothing? What do I say then? Oh, I know. Sorry, it wasn't politically correct.
Wait, you...
He turns away.
Well, folks, if you decide to go through with this, what we do is we assign a psychologist to your case. It's routine.
Well, Adam doesn't need a shrink.
Well, this is... to evaluate the two of you as a couple.
Dan interprets. Laura drops her stunned gaze.
This is a life choice that you're making for your family. For it to work, you both have to be in complete agreement.
She reads Dan's hands and shifts her jaw, then thoughtfully rumples her lips and nods, signing.
And if we're not?
Then don't do it.
The doctor stares at them solemnly. As Dan lowers his gaze with a slight smile, Laura uneasily closes her eyes and leans against a wall. Now she jogs down a sunny sidewalk wearing dark sunglasses. Her hair swings in a ponytail behind her. The jogging mother glances left and crosses a street as a cyclist rides past. Reaching the opposite sidewalk, Laura does a double take and slows to a stop. In the driveway of the Village Auto Clinic, a worker sprays down a truck's engine with a high-powered hose. Laura takes off her glasses and squints at the water misting in the air, then remembers her grandmother's steaming tea kettle. With a lingering look, she backs away, then jogs off. Now, outside the house, Adam crosses the street to a neighbor's home. In the front yard, a brown-haired boy wearing a headset sits in a cardboard box labeled Captain Mark.
Star Command's Night Warrior. Come in, Night Warrior. Do you read me? Uh-oh! An alien creature!
A blonde boy springs up. He races toward Adam, aiming a baseball bat like a rifle. Adam takes cover behind a tree.
Hey, cut it out! There's an alien!
He can play with us.
Talks like this!
His fingers flail.
Look at me, I'm dead!
Stop it!
Mark climbs out of the box and gives the blonde boy a rough shove.
Stop it!
The boy lunges at Mark and they wrestle to the ground. As Adam watches, Mrs. Scott arrives.
Mark! Stop that! Get off of him! What is going on?
She pulls the boys apart. Across the street, Laura peeks through her curtains and gapes at the commotion.
What has gotten into you?
He was making fun of Adam.
Oh,
say you're sorry, Todd.
No.
Say you're sorry.
I think that's a good idea. Say you're sorry.
The blonde boy backs away.
Todd.
He gives an annoyed gape. In the window, Laura watches with a furrowed brow as Todd reluctantly trudges up to Adam.
How do you say, I'm sorry?
Adam frowns at the jeering boy.
Todd?
Todd swivels to glance at Mrs. Scott, then opens wide, emphasizing his lip movements.
I'm sorry.
Adam shows him the sign, a loose fist moving clockwise over the heart. Todd repeats the sign to Adam. Laura smiles and closes her curtains. Now in his home office, Dan stands by a printer collecting pages as they emerge. He looks up and notices Laura standing in the doorway.
I'm trying to help the guys at the office with the King account.
He walks to his desk with a stack of pages.
Can't seem to do anything without me.
He casually clicks a button on his computer's keyboard and a diagram of the inner ear vanishes from the screen. Glaring at him, Laura enters the room. She drops a pile of documents onto his desk and crosses her arms. Dan picks up the pages and stares, then lowers them and looks at Laura, who quizzically lifts her brow.
So, you went through my briefcase?
Adam was drawing a picture. He likes those colored pens of yours.
Dan's eyes drift and he gives a faint nod. Taking a seat in a desk chair, he crosses his legs and straightens his shirt. With a shrug, the father signs.
Yes, we're set with the psychologist to be evaluated as a couple.
Laura stares, nodding.
So,
We are going ahead.
He looks away from her penetrating gaze.
For now?
Laura blinks and cocks her head.
And when did we decide that?
I was gonna show you.
Oh, I see.
Laura nods with mock sincerity, then picks up the documents.
Evaluation as a couple.
Adam watches from the staircase as Laura curtly drops the documents back onto the desk. The worried boy stands with his head resting on the banister.
The Hallmark Hall of Fame will return after these messages from CBS and your local station.
In the courtroom.
The grandmother.
Oh, I love it. I adore Adam. He's my pride and joy. That's why I just don't understand.
You don't understand what?
Or mother, if given the chance, would deny her child the ability to hear.
Mrs. Miller, speak. Could you wait until...
If it were my child, I would do anything to help.
But isn't it true that if Adam were in this courtroom today, you, as his grandmother, would be unable to communicate with him? To tell him that you love him?
He knows that I love him. I tell him all the time.
But how? You don't speak the same language.
I hold him. I hug him. He sees it in my face. It's beyond words. It doesn't matter what language we speak.
No further questions.
Later, Dan's lawyer questions Laura's mother on the stand.
Let me ask you this. If your own daughter, Laura, were hearing, would you love her any less?
Of course not. Mother loves her child no matter what.
So the fact that she is deaf is actually irrelevant, isn't it? And gives her no advantage, pro or con, as a mother. Isn't that what you're saying?
Objection, leading.
Seeking clarification, Your Honor.
I'll allow it.
Laura's mother continues signing.
What I'm saying is, my daughter and I share a deaf bond. We're both mothers. There is no word for it. No sign. It's a woman's love of her child. It connects Adam to Laura, her to me, all of us, all women, into a vast network, much more important than any internet.
What about Dan? Can't a man, a father, deaf or hearing, have the same connection with his child?
She smiles, signing emphatically.
Dan is a wonderful father. I know that he loves Adam deeply, that they share a deep bond of their own. But I also know that there are many deaf people for whom the implant was not successful. Dan needs to know that with or without the implant, Adam will always be deaf, and he must never be denied his sign language.
What is deaf pride?
Later, Laura's father signs on the witness stand.
Dignity, self-respect.
Can someone who acquires deafness, is not born deaf, have deaf pride?
Well, no, it's not the same.
How so? Being born deaf gives you what?
A deeper understanding, appreciation of the deaf world.
So are you saying there are two worlds, one for the hearing, one for the deaf?
Yes.
But isn't it true that the only difference between a deaf and hearing person is that one hears and the other doesn't? Otherwise, they are entirely the same.
No, it's more than that. As I explained in my book, we are a minority in this country with a culture. And like other minorities, we have some painful history. Discrimination, prejudice, lack of opportunity. All we want is to be ourselves, be perceived as people, and to celebrate who we are.
But wouldn't life be easier for you if you could hear?
The majority always thinks each minority wants to be like them. Most hearing people think that a deaf person, if given the chance, would rather be hearing than deaf. Not true, not for me. I know who I am. I have my people, I have my language, I have my culture, my identity. Let me be. As my wife says, God made all of us different
for a reason.
Now at the dining room table, Adam takes a bite from his fork. Laura's mother sits next to him, and Dan sits beside her at the head of the table. The family man sneaks a sidelong glance at Laura and her father, eating with stony faces on his right. A candle flickers between a bouquet of flowers and a half-carved turkey. Peering over them, Adam's eyes rove, then settle on his plate. Dan passes his mother-in-law a tray of string beans, which she takes without meeting his gaze. Adam looks across the table at Laura, whose stare drifts blankly. The sullen boy hesitates, then puts down his silverware and waves his hands. Each of his family members gives him their attention, and he signs. Dan nods slowly.
Yeah, happy Thanksgiving to all.
Laura beams at her son and signs with her index and pinky fingers raised. Her father smiles and nods, his sober expression quickly returning. Adam watches the deaf patriarch pass a plate of mashed potatoes to Laura, who passes to Dan. Without looking at her, he takes it and scoops himself a fluffy mound. Adam sets down his fork and waves to his father. Everyone watches as he stares intently at the hearing man. The last to notice, Dan looks up and gazes at his wavy-haired son. Dan's grave expression softens as he stares at Adam. All eyes lock on the young boy.
Yes, what is it?
Adam points at the plate next to Dan.
Potatoes? Yeah.
He hands the mashed potatoes to Laura's mom, who passes them to Adam. The boy sets them down.
Thank you.
As Dan stares with wide eyes, Laura watches Adam with tight lips. Her mother glances between them as her father furrows his brow.
Thank you, Daddy.
Dan helplessly shakes his head.
You're welcome.
Leaning toward Adam, he smiles tearfully. His mother-in-law glances at Laura, whose eyes shift, finding her father's face. The prideful older man stares grimly. Dan rises and hurries out. As Adam and his grandmother resume eating, Laura sets down her fork and napkin. Her father stares at her, making a querying gesture with one hand. His grown daughter gets up and strides out through a swinging door. Her son watches. The grandfather throws down his napkin and follows her. In the kitchen, Laura steps to the sink. Her father storms in behind her and taps the island to get her attention.
When did that start? Adam speaking.
Stop it.
Laura's mother faces her.
What is going on? Something is wrong with you and Dan. What is it?
Laura turns away and walks to the breakfast bar. She picks up two dirty serving dishes, then shuts her eyes and sets them back down on the countertop. Turning, she stares thoughtfully at her parents and signs.
Dan, he and I think we should...
Are you two planning to separate?
No.
Laura shakes her head vehemently and holds up her hand. She glances at the floor, then summons a breath and calmly continues.
Dan thinks we should...
As her mother stares wide-eyed, her father knits his brow.
Explore the idea of getting Adam an implant.
She spins away, grabs the two dishes, and takes them to the sink. Her mother gawks at her, then turns to the scowling grandfather. Both stare at Laura. In the dining room, Adam sits alone. As he continues to eat, surrounded by empty chairs, he gazes at the closed kitchen door. Meanwhile, in his office, Dan sits at his desk with a phone.
No, Mom, we just finished. I wish you and Dad were here. You won't believe what you... Wait a minute, hold on a second.
He walks briskly out and hurries into the dining room. Glancing warily at the closed kitchen door, he kneels next to his son with the phone in his hand and signs.
It's Grandma. She wants to talk to you. Okay? All right. Use your voice. You sounded great, and it would make her very, very happy. So say, hello, Grandma. Happy Thanksgiving.
As he puts the phone to Adam's ear, the boy eyes the kitchen door.
No.
Dan taps his shoulder.
Just use your voice.
Adam glances at the kitchen again. His father signs pleadingly.
Please.
Adam soberly shakes his head. His father lowers the phone, then lifts his hand and signs.
Okay.
He beams at the boy, who gives a somber gaze. Dan raises the phone back to his ear.
He says, hi, Grandma. Happy Thanksgiving.
The smile fades from Dan's face.
Yeah.
He signs for Adam.
She says, happy Thanksgiving to you, too. Did you eat a lot of turkey?
You are listening to video description on the SAP channel. To return to regular program audio, turn off the SAP feature on your TV or VCR. Meanwhile, in the kitchen.
You would never stick an implant in our grandson.
You know that I love him the way he is. But I'm just so afraid. What if I'm holding him back in some way?
Holding him back? Has being deaf held me back?
No, of course not.
When I was his age, I was the only deaf kid in the entire town. I was made fun of. I was beat up. I was alone.
She knows.
Nobody ever signed to me. Nobody. My father told me to talk like he did. He'd tie my hands together and lock me in a closet to keep me from signing.
Yes, yes, it was awful. She knows.
My father wanted my deafness to go away. Like these implants. Wipe us out. No more deaf.
She has to figure out what's best for her son. You can't force your experience on her.
You're a deaf mother with a deaf son.
I'm his mother first.
You are deaf first.
And Dan is still his father.
Dan is ashamed of his own son.
And wife?
Stop it, both of you.
Dan loves me from my heart, not my ears. I am Dan's wife, not his deaf wife.
I see different.
His wife. Well, what do you see? That Dan doesn't love me anymore?
Dan thinks we're handicapped, disabled.
His wife grabs his wrist.
No, the truth is, you think that about yourself.
Come on, let's go.
He starts to leave. His wife intercepts him.
You're a proud man, and I love you. But you live too much with a capital D, deaf way or no way. You see yourself as a deaf man instead of just a
man.
End
of subject. Finished.
He faces his daughter.
You were born deaf. You have a responsibility to pass on our culture.
Born deaf. Born deaf. As if that made me more deaf.
Laura storms out. In the foyer, she snatches a jacket from a hook and leaves the house. Her mother gazes after her from the kitchen door, then faces her husband with a wide-eyed glare.
It's time for all of this to stop.
Outside, Laura sits staring off with a knit brow. As her parents approach from the house, the mother signs to the father.
Tell her.
The older man nervously steps into Laura's line of sight, clutching the two sides of his open jacket. His adult daughter looks up at him.
You...
He helplessly works his hands in front of his chest, then lets them drop to his sides. Laura holds up one hand in a half shrug. Her mother takes her hand and holds it. The younger woman looks up at her and quizzically shakes her head.
You were born hearing.
A crease forms in the grown daughter's brow. As her father shifts his guilt-ridden gaze, her mother sits beside her. The older woman hugs her daughter and kisses her cheek. Laura recoils, blinking at her.
You are the most beautiful baby I had ever seen.
The grown daughter gapes at her mother, then turns to stare up at her father. He looks away, the corners of his mouth twitching.
Is that true?
The silver-haired man tilts his head, glances at his daughter, then signs sheepishly.
On the morning you were born, I walked into the hospital room. Your mother held you, wrapped in a pink blanket. Stood behind you and...
Laura's eyes narrow. Her father nods, glances skyward, and touches his forehead.
And we knew.
And you were disappointed.
I was upset. Said some things. Scared your mother.
Laura's mother rubs her arm, getting her attention.
I was relieved when your hearing finally went away.
The daughter looks away, a stunned expression washing over her features. She shakes her head, blinking, and faces her father. He averts his gaze. An upstairs window shows Dan peeking out around a curtain, watching them. Laura's father sits beside her and gently pats her arm.
Before then, you were very hard of hearing. Without hearing aids, you heard very little. A loud noise, door slam, a siren.
A tea kettle.
Laura's hands indicate steam rising from a kettle. The adult daughter stands, then faces her parents. Her father lifts one hand.
What?
You never gave me hearing aids.
Her mother stares wide-eyed.
Why?
She looks to Laura's father.
So you could say I was born deaf?
We did what we felt was best for our daughter.
You couldn't accept me as I was.
Her mother shuts her eyes and her father gazes off with a creased brow. Staring them down, Laura angrily shakes her head. The window shows Dan's concerned frown as he looks on. Inside, Adam lies in bed beside him. The boy taps his father's arm.
Is everyone mad at me?
No. Oh. Nobody's mad at you.
Dan sits on the edge of Adam's bed and faces the worried boy.
I'm very proud of you.
He smiles, then runs a hand through Adam's wavy auburn hair. The father takes a book off his son's lap.
Okay. This is the story of Pinocchio.
He signs as he reads.
Once upon a time, there was a woodcutter. Now, he was very lonely. What this old man wanted more than anything in the world was a son. Instead, he only had a puppet. So, this lonely...
Looking up from the book, Dan notices Adam's closed eyes. The boy's chest gently rises and falls.
This lonely man pretended that the puppet was a real boy.
The little boy's upper lip twitches as he sleeps. Dan lovingly watches his son, his hands folded casually over the book. With a puzzled frown, Dan sets the book aside, goes to the window, and brushes the curtain open. As he watches, Laura's mother gets into a waiting sedan. Her daughter faces the car with her arms folded across her chest. Dan steps away from the window as the sedan drives off. Outside, Laura gazes after her departing parents, then turns back toward the house. She strolls up the walk, shifting her melancholy gaze. Noticing Dan at the door, she gives a startled jump.
So, you were born hearing?
Laura's eyes narrow and she tilts her head.
I saw.
He points. His wife follows his gaze to Adam's bedroom window, then glares at Dan.
That was a private conversation.
I was worried about you.
Holding up her hands, Laura turns away. Dan grabs her arm.
Don't walk away from me. I love you, all right? I am not the big, bad, hearing man.
Oh, deaf hearing. I'm sick of it, all of it.
Laura.
She storms off. Laura, Dan follows and seizes her.
No,
leave me alone. Don't touch me. Everybody leave
Laura.
Me alone.
They fall. Dan struggles to calm her thrashing.
Stop.
Laura flings her arms around her husband's neck, her features contorted in anguish.
It's okay.
Dan sits up gently holding her. His tormented wife presses her cheek against his shoulder and he cradles her head in his hand. Dan winces sympathetically as Laura's sob-racked body leans against his.
The Hallmark Hall of Fame will return in a moment after these messages from Hallmark.
Now, Laura sits pensively with her cheek resting on her loose fist. She shifts her attention to Adam, who sits beside her. With an indigo crayon, he draws a smiling figure. The young mother gently pats his arm.
What's that?
A robot.
A robot?
Mm-hmm. She taps his arm again.
Good one.
Thanks.
The boy resumes drawing. Laura stoically presses her lips together and stands, joining her mother on a sofa.
Your father wants you to know that he loves you very much.
I know he does.
Nearby table lamps blink on and off. Adam stands and goes to the door.
You have to understand that it isn't easy for him.
As he opens it, a soccer ball flies in at him. Adam catches it as Mark enters and signs.
Mom, can I go out and play?
Mm-hmm. That's fine.
Adam dashes out with his friend. Laura stands and crosses to a window, signing to her mother. She pushes a curtain aside and peers out as her mother looks on. Laura faces her and shrugs.
What do I do about Adam? About my husband? When your father and I were first married...
Your marriage and mine, your era and mine, were worlds apart.
Perhaps.
Laura joins her mother on the sofa.
I teach deaf kids. But I had never seen a child slowly go deaf over time until it happened to my son. It happened to my daughter.
The younger woman gives a frustrated head shake.
He would stand right here in this room
and turn up the TV set louder and louder and still not hear it. And then look to me.
It can be heartbreaking.
Well, the deaf part of me said, don't worry, Adam. There's nothing wrong with you.
That's right.
But the mother part of me was saying, my little boy is scared and confused, and I can't help him. Well, maybe now I can.
You have choices today I never had to face.
Laura nods.
If you had a choice with me, what would you have done?
Smiling, the older woman shakes her head.
You are what you are meant to be. You're a teacher. What is the lesson you want to give your son?
Laura blinks thoughtfully, then lifts her brow, rumples her lips, and shakes her head. Now sunlight gleams on a large, pale house. Inside, Dan sits on a couch. He stares at his cell phone, then angrily rolls his eyes. Through a partially open door, he peers at a bespectacled woman with dark gold hair working at a desk. Dan steps to the door.
Excuse me, Dr. Walter, I can't get a...
She raises a finger, then waves him in, showing a tiny device.
I was just saying, I can't get a...
The doctor fits the device in her ear.
Oh, I'm sorry. You're deaf?
Pas de fin.
She signs and speaks.
No one told me.
One partner in your marriage is deaf. That's why I've been assigned to your care.
She removes her glasses.
Please, have a seat. Do you want some coffee?
No, thank you.
Dan sits as the doctor fills her coffee cup.
Being hard of hearing and deaf are two different things.
Yes. I think I heard that from somewhere.
She sets down the carafe and takes a seat beside him.
So, you were saying?
Yeah, I can't get a signal in this area. My wife, has she called you yet?
No, she hasn't.
Well, she's late. I don't know where she is.
You're here.
Yes, I'm here. But I think the whole point was for you to assess Laura and me as a couple.
That's right.
The therapist stands briefly, taking a notebook and pen from her desk.
Well, I hate to point out the obvious, but Laura's not here.
That's right.
And if she's not here, then she can't tell us how she feels about the implant.
I think she is telling us how she feels about the implant. I hate to point out the obvious. Is this typical of Laura, not calling, not showing up?
No.
And why is she doing it now?
I want to focus on Adam, not make this about her.
He's her son.
Yeah, well, he's my son, too. I mean, what am I? Am I the evil-hearing father because, you know, I want my kid to, you know, hear again?
No, of course not.
Thank you.
But you know what? Debating on the pros and cons of getting an implant is not my job. It doesn't interest me.
Oh. Well, what does interest you?
You. You interest me. Talk with your wife and we'll arrange another time.
I don't think I have any more time.
Her warm smile becomes a concerned frown. Dan shifts and leans forward.
May I ask you a question?
Of course. That's why I'm here.
The therapist grins and Dan briefly tightens his lips.
When Laura and I got married, we wanted to have a baby. Real bad. I knew when Adam was conceived, it was beautiful. I knew we were making our baby.
That's a nice thing to remember.
No. It's not.
Dr. Walter's smile fades and she quizzically lifts her chin.
Because when I was holding Laura in my arms, all I could think about was, please, make us a hearing baby.
The therapist gives a sober nod.
Does that make me bad?
Later, Dan arrives home. He tensely paces the foyer, glancing toward the surrounding rooms. Setting his briefcase on the banister, the family man goes upstairs. He opens his bedroom door and finds Laura seated on the bed, clutching a cell phone. She raises her hands in a broad shrug, dropping the phone at her side.
It's late.
Adam's sleeping?
Yeah, he kept asking me, where's Daddy?
Dan bites his lip and stalks toward a closet.
I met with the therapist today.
He removes his jacket.
We had that appointment, remember?
I was worried that something had happened.
Something did happen.
Laura gives a confused shrug and Dan steps out of the closet.
Did you explain to Adam why Mommy not only didn't show up at her 3:45 appointment with the therapist and with Daddy, but didn't even call?
I tried calling. I tried texting. But it wouldn't send. It just said signal failure.
Well, I couldn't get a signal in that building, so...
So I tried to reach the receptionist. I typed a message, but stopped.
Mm-hmm.
The words I typed on my screen were there. Can you find my husband?
Laura sadly holds her hands out.
Where have you gone?
Lips tight, Dan angrily juts his face toward her.
1 + 1 = 2. I teach math, don't forget.
1 + 1 = 2?
Adam and I. If there's something wrong with Adam, then there's something wrong with me. And I don't know when that happened. When did that happen?
Dan turns away. Laura pounds the bed.
When did that happen? That I became disabled to you. Disabled. Not able to, what, be your wife, your lover, carry on a conversation? What? What happened?
You can't have a conversation with anyone without me. Can you?
He doesn't sign.
Without me having to interpret everything for you. Back and forth. Back and forth.
Dan wipes his mouth and signs.
God gave me a hearing son. And then he let me fall in love with him. And then he...
Her mouth agape, Laura flips off the lights, casting the room in darkness. Dan strides to another switch and flips them back on. Laura avoids his gaze, tears shining on her face. Her husband signs broadly.
God gave me a hearing son, and then he took him away from me. And now I see him sitting with you, just signing away. And I think to myself, no, it's not fair. He was mine.
He's ours.
I want my son back.
Laura stares at him, her graceful features contorted by her sobs. Dan turns away and sits on the bed. Leaning forward, he presses his forehead into his palm and squints his eyes shut. Laura manages to face her husband, then signs helplessly.
We were a family.
Now in the courtroom, Dan sits on the witness stand, gazing down morosely.
So much has happened since Adam's birthday. My wife and I are... Now here, legally separated.
Laura heaves a melancholy sigh. Their parents watch from the gallery.
Your Honor, please, just give me my son.
The judge stares impassively at him.
Are you currently employed, Mr. Miller?
I work at Krupp, Harrison, and Dean. It's one of the biggest PR firms in the city.
And how does your salary compare to that of your wife?
I make more than 3 times her salary, and next year they're going to make me senior vice president.
Your Honor, submitted our financial statements of Mr. Miller's current holdings, as well as projection reports of future earnings. It includes the financial portfolio Mr. Miller has created to fund Adam's future care and education.
Does it also include the cost of getting a cochlear implant?
Objection.
Sustained, out of line. I'm warning you.
Mr. Miller, are you willing and able to undertake the financial responsibility of raising a child, as well as alimony payments to your wife, should your separation become final?
I'll provide Adam with whatever he needs and help Laura any way I can.
Mr. Miller, do you love your son?
More than anything in the world.
Does he seem any less to you now that he is deaf?
Absolutely not. He's my son. I want my son.
Thank you, Mr. Miller. No further questions.
Mr. Miller, if you retain custody of your son, will you give him a cochlear implant?
Objection. The question is hypothetical and ask the witness to theorize on future
events.
Your
Honor, the question is no more hypothetical than a report of projected earnings. Mr. Miller could lose his job tomorrow. The question is fundamental to the child's future under care of this witness.
I'll allow it, but remember, this is a custody hearing. It's not a legal debate about implants. The witness will answer.
Mr. Miller, I'll ask you again. If you receive custody of your son, will you give him a cochlear implant?
He'll never hear Mozart again, or the Beatles.
Yes or no?
Or Beethoven.
Beethoven was deaf, Mr.
Miller. Or the crack of a baseball bat in a major league ballpark.
Yes or no?
I want my son to hear those things. Yes, I would give him a cochlear implant.
So the truth is you don't accept your son for who he is, do you?
Of course I do.
Then why are you planning to have him surgically altered?
Objection, inflammatory.
Sustained.
Why the rush, Mr. Miller? Why not allow Adam the freedom of experiencing life as a deaf person? Then as an adult, he can decide for himself.
The best time is now.
For him or for you?
A parent has to decide what's best for his child.
Yeah, but the child's mother is pleading with you not to do it. Is she not also the child's parent? She may be deaf, but she has a voice. Does she not, Mr. Miller?
I'm thinking of Adam's best interests.
But is it in Adam's best interest to surgically insert an electronic device into his skull when the benefits are controversial and the long-term effects are unknown?
I want my son to be able to hear a smoke detector or a symphony, use a telephone, or hear someone yell, "Look out," or his grandmother say, "I love you." I mean, is that such a terrible thing?
Mr. Miller, nobody is saying that's a terrible...
What am I supposed to do? Keep him from hearing on purpose when I don't have to? Why would I do that? What kind of father would I be?
Your Honor, could you please...
I would cut off my right arm in a heartbeat for my boy. That made his life easier. Isn't that how a parent is supposed to feel?
Wide-eyed, Laura stares at her husband. Her gaze drifts and her jaw clenches. On the stand, Dan resentfully looks away, then bows his head. Later.
Is Dan a bad father?
Laura sits on the stand.
No.
And you consider yourself a good mother?
The interpreter watches her.
Of course.
And yet Dan is trying to afford every opportunity for your son, and you are not.
Objection.
I'll rephrase. How do you reconcile the fact that your son, without an implant, has a much more limited future?
That's a matter of opinion. I don't think he does.
Opinion, Mrs. Miller. We've established that statistically.
I'm a teacher. I teach my students that deafness is not a disability.
All right.
But it's something to be celebrated.
All right, thank you, Mrs.
Wait. Miller. I've not stopped talking.
You answered the question, Mrs.
Your Honor, objection. The witness should be allowed to answer the question fully.
I will allow it. The witness will continue.
I teach them to accept their deafness, cherish it, revel in it. As his mother, I tell Adam to accept his deafness. But he is not disabled.
Your Honor, we've already established that Adam is disabled.
You've made your point, Mr. Grisham.
Dan shifts his tense gaze.
He is able to do everything except hear. That his inability to hear has no effect on his ability to think, to achieve, to love.
Adam's ability to love is not in question here, Your Honor.
Let me hear her out, Mr. Grisham.
The lawyer rolls his eyes and turns away.
My job is to teach Adam to be himself, to thrive and grow up to become a decent and kind man, no matter what, to celebrate his difference, his uniqueness. Adam has already experienced one trauma, becoming deaf. I feel he shouldn't be put through another one. I believe what's best for Adam is to let him be.
Laura raises a finger and points to it.
Let him be Adam. And that's why I must have custody of my son.
Her brow furrowed, Laura addresses the judge. She shifts her pleading look to Dan, who sadly lowers his gaze. Later.
Let me remind both parties.
Once again,
this is a custody hearing. The purpose of these proceedings is not for the court to decide whether the minor should receive an implant. That's a personal issue.
Nearby, an interpreter signs.
I will deliberate over the weekend. This court will reconvene on Monday at 3:00, at which time I will rule on the matter of the custody of the minor.
As the judge steps down, Laura faces Mrs. Tate and holds up a questioning hand. Mr. Grisham pats Dan's back. They leave the courtroom with his parents.
Leonard, what does this mean?
Exactly what she said. We have to wait till Monday.
Longest weekend of my life.
Still have the rest of the day. Go to work, Dan.
Do you think I have a chance?
You have a good chance. Have a nice weekend.
He shakes hands with Dan's parents.
See you Monday.
Yeah.
The departing attorney pauses by Mrs. Tate, who stands with Laura and her parents.
See you Monday, Miss Tate.
Yeah, see you then.
Dan and Laura lock eyes. Now a framed photo shows Adam and Laura in their pirate costumes.
And I was thinking I've been very happy at Hunter, Connor & Associates, so how do I know we won't regret a move?
Dan stares at the picture.
Dan?
He faces his prospective client.
What?
She skeptically tilts her head.
Oh, no, I heard you.
Did you? Really?
No, I did. To me, public relations is about perception. My job is to recognize what it is about you that makes you, you know, unique, special.
Dan manages an encouraging nod, and his gaze darts back to the photo, at the house. Laura squirts a mountain of whipped cream onto a mug of cocoa. Adam sips from it, then sets it down, revealing a cream-covered upper lip. He signs.
Look, I got a mustache.
Yes, I can see that.
He sweeps it off with his flexed thumb.
See? I can shave, just like Daddy.
He sucks his thumb clean. Laura's smile fades, and she sips from a mug.
When is Daddy coming home?
Laura puckers her lips and makes a drinking motion.
Drink up. Time for bed.
Leaving the kitchen island where Adam sits, she takes her own mug to the sink, then faces her pajama-clad son.
I don't like Daddy not being here with us.
Laura leans forward, resting her elbows on the island.
Neither do I.
She rests her chin on her hand. Now Laura nestles into bed, softly illuminated by a bedside lamp. She gazes at the unoccupied space beside her. Reaching out, she sadly caresses Dan's pillow. At the baseball diamond, Dan sits alone on the bleachers with his shoulders hunched. As the wind gently ruffles his short, sandy blonde hair, he stares across the field with his lips pressed tight together. In his bed, Adam stares at the ceiling. In his parents' bed, Laura heaves a sigh, her brow furrowed. On the bleachers, Dan covers his mouth with his fist. His eyes glisten tearfully and his body shakes with sobs. The troubled family man squeezes his eyes shut, then wipes at one with the knuckle of his thumb. A tear rolls down his cheek and he wipes it away. Morning. At the house, sunlight streams through a pair of thinly curtained French doors as Laura takes a milk carton to the refrigerator. She puts it away, then pauses, staring at a photo posted with a magnet. It shows Adam and Dan in their pirate hats. The lights flash off and on. With a puzzled frown, Laura steps away. Upstairs, Adam sits at his desk. The boy looks up at his flashing desk lamp. Downstairs, Laura answers the door and finds a haggard Dan on the stoop. She stands in the partially open doorway, gazing warily at her husband.
I didn't know.
Dan feebly signs.
My hands are shaking.
He shows his trembling hands, then lets them drop. Laura regards his weary expression, then lifts her brow questioningly and gestures for him to come in. He briefly nods his fist and enters. As Laura shuts the door, her husband takes a seat near the bottom of the stairs. He nervously claps his tensed hands, then signs.
My father used to tell me that life was shaped by choices. Everybody must decide what's best for them. Make your choice.
Dan briefly tilts his head, then looks away.
And from the beginning, I said I only wanted what was best for Adam. That's not true.
Laura watches him steadily.
I really wanted what was best for me. And what's best for me?
Dan lifts his brow and his eyes glisten. He smiles gently and points.
It's you.
Laura slowly crosses to the banister, her tearful gaze fixed on her husband. Dan wipes one eye with the heel of his hand. Staring between his palms, he claps them together, then gazes shyly toward Laura and signs.
I miss my best friend.
Resting an elbow on the banister, Laura shuts her eyes and shakes her head.
I've been so afraid of losing my connection with my boy. And through all of this, all I wanted was...
run to my best friend and talk. To share how scared I am. How hurt I felt. How confused I've been. How much I've been struggling. The hardest part was not being able to.
Dan watches her with a furrowed brow. Laura lowers herself onto the step beside her husband. She briefly presses her lips together.
I want my best friend back.
Dan regards her with tearful eyes. His wife glances toward the stairs and licks her lips.
Adam wants, he needs both of us.
Her husband lowers his gaze and shrugs his brow. With a faint smile, he shakes his head.
I don't think we need a judge to decide to choose.
The family man meets his wife's gaze.
What's best for us?
Her gray-blue eyes clear. Laura leans toward him slightly and nods. She thoughtfully puckers her lips and her gaze drifts off.
Whatever choices we make.
With two fingers, she points emphatically at Dan and herself.
We make together.
Dan wags his pinky between them. Touching his index fingers to his thumbs, he draws a circle in the air with his hands.
As a family.
Dan nods, resting his elbows on his knees. He and his wife gaze soberly forward. Our view drifts up the stairs, which turn a corner near the top. Around the corner, Adam perches on a step, peeking down at his parents through the banister rails. Near the foot of the stairs, Laura tentatively slips her hand around Dan's elbow, resting her fingers on his forearm. He warmly rests his hand on hers and gives it a little squeeze. Upstairs, the little boy solemnly looks on. Downstairs, his parents remain side by side, their expressions thoughtful. Our view drifts close to their lovingly clasped hands. Their simple gold wedding bands gleam softly in the lamplight, fade to black.